Remember I talked about opening up that nightlight to see more of the universe
right.
in the room. We will have to extend our awareness, expand our capacity for awareness. That includes something known as telepathy. It includes being able to clearly read someone. And that sure eliminates an awful lot of negativity, lying, cheating, stealing. Dick wants to get in on this. I can see it. Go ahead, Dick.
Well, we are, in order to function as a unit, we have to recognize that we are, or the planet is that small, it's very finite, and that we must live as a global village. In order to live as a global village, that would indicate a freedom from conflict and a freedom from the fears of want, which means a cooperation such as Wendell Willkie envisioned in the 40s in his book One World has got to come about. Now, Billy Graham, who's a neighbor down the road in North Carolina here, talks about the third millennium or the 1,000 years, the golden years of peace, tranquility, and advancement for the human race. And for that to occur, we have to transcend the conflicts and the Sturm und Drang that is on the planet today. And so what would the projection for the golden age be? It sounds wonderful to me. This sounds wonderful.
Okay, good luck with the new brand new 7-octave spectrum, half a color computers and printers and things like that when we finally advance that far. Now, I'm not being sarcastic either. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we will. You can imagine that we'll take the technology with us through all of this and
infrared, ultraviolet, and a sun lamp and things like that. Imagine computers covering like that. Never mind visible color.
Right.
Oh, okay, thank you very much. I sure appreciate it.
Before you get off, when you talk about colors, I wrote in on a slide of light in 1980 or 79 that when I went where I call out there, out of the body, out, I was able to see the music and hear the colors.
Oom-papa.
Well, this is my experience.
Right.
I'm thrilled to see that Shirley MacLaine picked the sentence up and used it in one of her books as well. And she also claims to have seen the music and heard the colors.
Right.
These are very palpable things when you're out of this dimension. And I am hopeful that part of the golden age for mankind and in his arsenal of sensory capacities will be these abilities. And that to me is a wondrous thing.
Does that help you out, Jeffrey?
Right, of course, because I'm enthusiast for color. Okay, I'll relinquish the line on to the next caller. But thank you very much. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Bill, in the news that was on at the break, they talked about the earthquake in China.
Mm-hmm.
And in line with the conversation we had, do you remember the ancient Chinese curse which said, "May you be born in an interesting time"?
We certainly were.
I think we are now.
And we have an interesting time here. We're going to take a little pause, Jungleline. Hello, George.
Hello. My apologies, I have a bad cold.
Well, my apologies, because I've always got one.
I'm sure Greta won't be able to hear me.
Can you hear George, Greta?
Barely.
Okay.
I'll translate.
I'd like to ask you to relay my question. I have two. The first is, what town in Washington is the QFON?
I think it's in, I can get you the telephone number. I think it's in Spokane.
Well, if it's in Spokane, I can get it from information.
Yeah.
All right. My question for Greta is, Robert Monroe has a foundation somewhat like hers in the same general geographical area in the South.
Mm-hmm.
Does she know the foundation? And
yes, he's in Virginia.
Teaching activities Monroe carries out. I'm going to hang up so I can hear her.
Okay, he just wanted to know, Greta, were you familiar with Robert Monroe and the Institute of Applied Sciences that he has? And what you feel is happening over there, and is it similar to what you're doing?
He is using mechanical devices to heighten the sensory awareness of the individual and bring you to an out-of-body experience. It's supposed to be remarkable. Greta and Bob have been in touch back and forth and have never gotten together.
Only on the phone. He's in Virginia and we're in North Carolina. But I understand they do wonderful work over there.
Well, they do more than just go out-of-body over there. They're doing a lot of research. They're certainly looking at a lot of history because they can go back to it. Finding out a lot about the human consciousness that you were talking about earlier. We had quite a spectacular show with him, I thought, here not too long ago.
Wonderful.
All right. Melinda, you're on.
Hi. I don't want to sound stupid or anything. My husband and I, we're new listeners to this radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And we tuned in tonight and we were in the car and we have found this entire conversation extremely fascinating.
Well, I'm glad you got aboard, partner.
I know. It's really, we're just like wow. But I do have a question for Greta, and it's, and I don't know that it's a question so much. It's just, I'm really kind of confused on her belief as far as at one point I heard her say that she doesn't feel religion even fits into her, the whole feeling on,
I didn't say that, dear.
Okay,
I didn't think that religiosity belonged in the questions that we were addressing on change.
On change. Okay, that's just what I wanted to know. Because sometimes many times, in fact, from what you said, it sounded like you were, had many beliefs from the Bible. Many of the things you've said, has the beliefs that are centered around that. And that's what I just want to know is, in the beliefs of these entities and stuff.
Remember, we're talking about entities,
right,
not deities. I have a very strong religious conviction of my own, and I don't think that it has any place in the dialogue of the Ogata group, simply because there is no connection in my heart or in my mind. When I turn to God, I turn to God when I approach a healing. I certainly don't turn to God when I am a channel.
Now, can you clarify the difference for me?
Between what and what?
Well, you said you don't. Okay, the last part you said you do turn to God in a channel.
No, she said she turns to God when she's going to do a healing, but she doesn't whenever she is going to channel.
Be a channel.
Okay, now I don't understand what the channel part is.
Well, I don't necessarily turn to God when a friend comes into my home, whom I know.
Right.
And I don't turn to God when an entity from another place comes into my vehicle, whom I know, because I don't think it's necessary at that moment. As far as religious lines go, it matters not to me whether I say a Hail Mary, face east, say a Shema, whatever makes a person comfortable.
Right.
I will pray with them in the words that make them comfortable, as long as we all appreciate a higher intelligence, a supreme energy. I don't think we have to delineate it. Once we do, once you define, you've lost something.
Greta, I find you very fascinating. That's just totally intrigued me, this whole evening listening to you and to Dick, and I'm just really happy and glad that we were able to tune in and listen, and we're going to continue to listen.
God bless your heart. You won't find better than Bill Jenkins here.
You know what?
Open-minded.
I agree. This is my first time, and I'm just totally fascinated.
Well, Melinda, do you understand what channeling means?
To a point. Not completely. And, I don't mean to sound ignorant or anything, but this is...
Don't feel that way at all. But if I could explain it this way... Greta explained it earlier in what she goes through, but it's the ability that I guess all of us really have to receive information that comes from a point other than our consciousness.
I agree with that. I believe in that.
And in Greta's case, she's getting her information from a group of entities that come from a distant planet.
That's amazing.
Okay?
Okay, thank you so much. I really enjoyed that.
Some well-thought-out chances. And don't be afraid of success or failure, because... success and failure really don't make the criteria by which you live. I am very, very fond of those who not only dare to try, but those who dare to fail. And that's wonderful.
As long as they dare to, as long as they're trying, that's amazing. And I also want to make a real quick comment, too, about the RP. I'm totally blind myself, but mine's from diabetes. But when the lady had called in about the RP, I was just because I work at the Braille Institute here in Orange County. And I have so many friends, dear friends, that have got RP, and I was totally amazed by that.
Well, we hope that something can come out of that.
Yeah, I hope that's true. That sounds wonderful.
We hope so. I worked for years at the Institute in New York. In fact, most of the fiction books that are out on tape are my voice.
Is that right?
So we're very, very connected to, and very simpatico to, those who have eyesight problems.
How can you miss that voice of yours?
I know that it's, I'm going to really, I'll be able to, next time I hear it, if I hear it on a, you know, a talking book or whatever, I'll be able to pick it up right away.
Bless your heart. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melinda, for joining us, and do make a habit out of it.
I am. This is fascinating. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Excuse me. I'm very fascinated by the program this evening.
Thank you.
Because all of my life I have always been interested in something beyond ourselves. And I wanted to ask the woman if extraterrestrials have been visiting our planet for thousands of years, why are we still so afraid of them, and why haven't they become a part of our world? You know, I don't understand the big thing going on here.
I think you've answered your own question, why indeed. And I think it's becoming more and more easy to accept, don't you? Thanks perhaps in part to the mass media, where they are exposing you to all sorts of wonderful concepts. When a Spielberg comes out with his E.T. or his Close Encounters, when a Shirley MacLaine goes out on a limb, when a Jay-Z Knight presents a Ramtha, years ago when we came out with On a Slide of Light or Write the Update, we're saying to people, hey, contemplate the possibilities. They've been here for a millennia. And now, you know, is the time when they, again, everything goes in cycles, 2,600-year cycles, as a matter of fact.
Uh-huh.
History repeats itself monotonously, and we're in that period now. My God, it's awesome to contemplate that we're here to involve in this.
Yeah, but why don't they pull us out of some of our problems? For instance...
That's not their job.
Oh, no, but wait a minute, dear. I mean, here we are confronted with AIDS, right? Something that is just going to wipe out so many millions of people if they don't find a vaccine in the near future. I mean, if these people are so advanced, and they must be, to do what they're doing, why not throw a little light on our problems here? It doesn't make sense to me, dear, you know. I understand it, yet I don't.
We have too many incidents whenever they do try to get close that we shoot at them. Would you like to run down to that snake pit?
Absolutely, and you know, plagues are something that are historic. There have been so many plagues, and there will, with our own technology as it advances, find ourselves in a position where we do indeed find the answers. I don't think it's their job, do you, Dick?
Mark, one of the great precepts of the higher evolutions is the exercise of free will. Not to direct anybody, but to give just a little direction. And I think what will happen once the recognition of extraterrestrial civilizations is on a worldwide basis is that the philosophical, moral, and social views as practiced on our planet will be revised and changed for the better.
You know, we took for a slogan for Star Foundation a statement that was made very early on, and that was that they would give directions, not directives. And that followed a long dialogue on this subject of free will. Nobody has to be told what to do. I wouldn't want to be told what to do. I wouldn't be in this if they were dictating to me.
You know, when we are ready to receive and do something, we will evolve and pull the technology out. Certainly fission and fusion were here since the beginning of the universe, and it was only in the late 30s or 40s that Einstein put together the ability for us to do it. And, of course, mankind did it in a manner which didn't benefit mankind particularly. But that technology has been around since the beginning of time. It would have been incongruous, out of a time phase, an anachronism, if indeed they came down to give fission and fusion to an aboriginal type of society here.
Okay, but I wanted to say, couldn't they channel to someone, to a biochemist? I mean, let's face it, you know, here we are confronted with a terrible, terrible problem. And, you know, there's no vaccine in sight for 5 or 10 years. And you're not, I'm a teacher by profession, and you're not going to tell these kids in college, hey, you better do this, you better do that, because they're not going to listen to you. They're just not going to. So I think if these extraterrestrials have so much know-how, I mean, they could just work through somebody else and just say, hey, look, try it this way, you know?
I'm all for that. Let me tell you, we are not the ones, of course, who are getting hardcore science. There are those who do. Tom Bearden is one of them who gets hardcore science.
Who's this now?
Tom
Bearden, who will be on the show in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Nikola Tesla pretty well says that's where he got his information.
To him.
Einstein says that's where he got his information.
Okay, but do you understand what I'm saying? Here we are confronted with, you know, I mean, let's be honest. You know, the kids are going to lose their lives by the million here if something is not done.
There are some very, very encouraging things that are being done in AIDS, and it's not being done in a chemical way.
Yeah.
But it's being done in an electronic way.
I understand, but what about getting that channeling that we're talking about?
That's where that technology of which I'm speaking here, that I happen to know something about, came from.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, that's marvelous. You know, the reason I talk like this is because I am a singer by profession, classical singer, and when I was studying voice very heavily and trying to sing these high notes, I was practicing a deep form of breathing. And I, in fact, one night left my body. I mean, I felt this force. Yes, I felt this force at the foot of my bed. And pow, I was out, you know.
Welcome to the club.
Pardon me?
Said welcome to the club. Everybody's at that club but Bill.
Is that right? Well, no, but you know, I wasn't even trying to do it. I was just taking an enormous breath to sing this high B natural from an aria, from an opera.
Mm-hmm.
And before I knew it, you know, I mean, I guess whatever I did, you just click this thing off to go. And it only happened twice. But I know that things are going on, and I'm very open to all of this, and I try to tell my students that they should be open also. But there is a tremendous scare of this AIDS disease, and it's frightening. You know?
Well,
it is indeed.
There are some great advances being made. In a very unusual way, I can say that much about it, and that's about all I can tell you right now.
Well, anyway, thanks for your time. I enjoy the show.
Keep breathing deeply.
Keep helping.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark.
Bye-bye.
Good to have you aboard. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, we do finally.
Good evening.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful to talk to you both. I'm looking forward to the Whole Life Expo. That sounds very exciting. You know, it's interesting. The man that just spoke talked about deep breathing and being a singer. I was a singer at one time, and I'm a deep breather. But I had an experience last week when I was watching Shirley MacLaine's film, Out on a Limb. And it was quite, it was emotionally very exciting and upsetting and frightening in a way, because she was talking about out-of-body experience. And suddenly I felt that I had been out of body many times as a child when I thought I was dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it was dreaming or whether it was out of body experience, but I had the same dream over and over again. And I was flying in the room. And it was a wonderful, wonderful feeling, and I hated to wake up out of the dream. It was exhilarating. It was peaceful. I didn't know at the time it was spiritual. And I just wondered if it was an out-of-body experience. And if so, why would I have it? What was the reason for it?
To have a good experience.
Well, that's probably the basic answer. The human being is able, of course, to separate the life force from the physical vehicle. And I guess only you can know if that was your experience, Annette.
It sounds like one,
mm-hmm.
flying around the room. But maybe you did, Anne.
I don't know.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And Joe, you're on.
Hello, Bill. Hi, Greta, Dick.
How you doing? Hello.
I'd like to ask you a little bit about if there was any information given to you or any personal comments about the economy and whether or not we could possibly have another world war soon.
Well, certainly the changes that are coming will bring our economy to a change phase. The 1929 experience showed us that you can't spend more than you have for a considerable period of time. and we've been running, as has most of the world, a deficit financing. So I think we're going to see a great revision in the financial structures. Our financial markets have gone from investment grade to gambling casinos, and some of the great financial minds of the country, like Felix Rowetton and Bill Simon, William Simon, former Secretary of the Treasury, are beginning to be very, very concerned about the gambling aspects in our financial markets. So in an economic sense, I think we are going to go through some revisions, because we're not solving our financial problems. We're just building bigger and bigger and bigger numbers.
We'll have to think twice if we have another day like last Friday.
Oh, my goodness. Wasn't that something? Wasn't that something?
I didn't think it was.
They could find the thing. It's a runaway freight train.
Yeah. Well, it's a war-based economy, and if they do try and stimulate the economy with one more war, we all lose. Unfortunately.
Too bad they can't stimulate it with space travel.
Well, yeah.
Which we did do at one time, you remember.
Yeah, you're talking about one mode. I guess the best way now is the proven existence of unified fields. I mean, that's only obvious. I guess, what's the guy's name? Newman. He's already proven that it works, and it's a major controversy. As far as the extraterrestrials not getting involved, I think that they already are involved, and that they try and stay out of it, but when it comes right down to it, they're not going to let a handful of people, and that's really what it is, a handful of greedy people that are trying to throw a monkey wrench in the whole works. There has to be somebody to take care of it. I mean, we've relinquished control or been stepped on so many times that, well, it would be nearly impossible for us unless there was a revolution of sorts. To take back the power that we've been robbed of. I find it very unfortunate. I don't know if you noticed that a politician took his life recently, but apparently it was bribery, and he had something to do with the Treasury, and he knew that something was coming up. I refrain from speaking any further on it, other than the fact that it's going to be crazy. See, if you've watched the market, it's gone straight up and straight down. So something is terribly, terribly wrong. And, you know, for a country that is totally bankrupt to loan itself another $1 trillion to go out and instigate another war is asinine. I don't care what Reagan says or what any of those people say. They're only fooling themselves, and if they keep it up, we're going to see direct intervention. It's happened before. They've seen ships over the missiles and have found that the programs have been changed. So they don't have control, and if they claim they do, it's a lie.
Joe, what you're saying is that it is a runaway freight train and nobody is solving any of the problems. They're just getting worse and larger.
But we're all learning from the experience. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just speaking about it plainly. Yeah, it scares me, but okay, I chose to be here to be scared, whatever that means. All I know is what's going on, and as much as they try and hide the truth, they're digging a bigger hole and they're going to bury themselves in it. I'm speaking of the handful now. That has conglomerated to a point where they have a monopoly over everything, spiritual and physical. They've got a stranglehold on it.
There's one thing they don't have a stranglehold on, and that is your mind and my mind and the ability to speak out and refuse to get put in this little mold that they want you to get up and go to work, come home, watch television, go to bed, get up, go to work, and don't think.
But, you know, you talk about getting help. I can't emphasize enough in my own thinking that nobody can make decisions for you but you. The individual, I don't think, is any longer able to abdicate responsibility for himself to this ubiquitous they. You know, they really should not be making decisions for us, and I don't care if the they is the government, the state, the gurus, the extraterrestrials. We must assume the decision-making responsibility. I mean, it's our future. This is why I said you have to, at certain times, look at it in a very small packet. What are you going to do, you, for survival? You know, the one trait universal to survival is attitude. And the tools for survival are in our heads. Without the right attitude, there are no tools that can save you. And I think that the time has come where everybody has to simply rate themselves. A sense of purpose. And this means having both long-range and short-range goals. Rational thinking. Survivors are planners. unconventional thinking. And this means being able to redefine situations, to see it differently. Anything goes, you know, if it means your survival. We talk about creativity. Resourceful thinkers devise ways of using equipment, for example, in unusual fashion to accomplish what they want. Positive self-images. Feeling confident that you, by golly, can take care of yourself, that you like yourself. It's a key characteristic of survival. But we can't abdicate these responsibilities to governments or to anybody else. And that includes extraterrestrials. We are an adaptable people, and we have to be able to stand the stresses of the unpredictable and of the unknown. We need an inner strength that I think people are starting to show. And man is meant to survive. I believe human beings have been destined to survive. In fact, the struggle to survive is what people are good at, or none of us would be here at all today.
Joe, you may have been describing one of the great triggers for these changes that are going to come up.
Right.
Well, a friend of mine had a vision where he saw some of the key installations right here in town at Los Angeles were seemingly destroyed by a laser weapon. It sounded very much like these nuclear lasers they're trying to deploy. Curiously enough, I know about scalar technology, but I don't think that was what this was. If it was what he was seeing in a prophetic dream, I believe it was the fact that they launched, somehow they got one of those things up there, one of those satellites, and they punched in a program, and it was reprogrammed by somebody else to come right back on them. I mean, these people, it's obvious they don't care about other people. You know, they want to rape every resource, but they're going to get a taste of their own medicine. Like I said before, they're digging their own hole. But anyways, thank you very much for what you're, you know, I agree. People should start programming their own lives and not be such followers all the time in blind faith. It's great to have faith in yourself and know who you are, what you are, where you are. Those are all important things. But just to follow blindly the system, and, especially such a corrupt and insidious, insensitive, and really sometimes just purely asinine kind of a system, that's, to me, it's counterproductive.
Well, there are a lot of people that are not doing it, and I'd like to point you to two books that will kind of maybe make you feel better about it. The Aquarian Conspiracy of
Marilyn
Ferguson, mm-hmm. and The Turning Point by Dr. Friedrich Capra. Mm-hmm. If anything, there seems to be a vast global underground at
yeah.
work, or a subculture, if you want to call it. At one time, the United States was a subculture, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And because there is this disenchantment with the establishment, and it is beginning to work and play among itself now and not pay attention to what the other people are doing. It will interface with them when it's necessary. And this is true in science and in government, and it doesn't seem to have any bounds, and it certainly has no guru.
I agree.
That is happening.
I agree. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like it was such a negative thing, what's going on
yeah.
here. It's out with the old, in with the new. That's great. I appreciate that. Well, anyways, I don't want to ramble on much
okay.
longer. Thank you very much.
Thank you for
Thank
joining
you.
Us on that.
Good night.
What's that telephone number again?
Thanks for having Greta and her husband on. I was very interested and very fascinated with the group that you said that you have made contact with. And I was interested in knowing what did they relate to you, any idea or give you any impression of what their life was like, their everyday life?
Oh, yes. I think the thing that most fascinated us was the family unit. In a world that we're living in with a 42% and rising divorce rate and one-parent families, we were fascinated to learn that they had units of five, for example. Three female, two male, that surround each entity that's brought into their solar system, or as they call it, their chorpa. And by the way, there are five planets connected to this Ogata group.
I think they all get along well.
They get along exquisitely well, and I think we can learn something from them. If there is a major problem, whether it's ecological or social or whatever,
uh-huh.
if there's a problem, they have no problem sending the very best in the solar system. To be helpful, can you just see us doing that, Bill? I'm very impressed with the way they
fantasize about those things, Greta, but I don't know whether we could do that.
But that's very interesting on a distant solar system, that they would have a similar...
entities who are able to be productive and still have one always there for the child, for the little person.
That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Are they born and do they transcend their physical or entity type life, energy life, or whatever?
There is a zero population growth as we understand it, and we're not very clear on it. When an entity departs, another one is brought in.
You know, the biotechnology of an advanced civilization is very difficult to describe if we don't have the language. And that's what they said to us. We have to talk to you in analogy, so we have to use analogs of what is on your planet. And when the biotechnology is more advanced or different, you really haven't got the analogs.
I see. I have one other question as well. Did they give you any insight into why we as a people... seem to have such a difficulty in cooperating with each other, as you were and as many other callers were pointing out earlier, cooperating with each other in a sense for our own common good. Why is that so difficult for us?
Well, I don't know that they view it that way. What they did say to us was, you know, that they were most interested in our survival. Despite what man can do to man, despite nature's plan, there are 24-plus civilizations eager and willing to be helpful to this planet for its survival. So I think they have great hope for us.
Hmm.
Was your question, why do they find us so uncooperative with each other?
No, I was wondering, a civilization of people that have been observing our people for so long, I wondered if they have any, you know, insight into our character as to what makes us tend to be so, you know, we cooperate to a degree, but when you look at mass starvation and you look at the world and the situation that we're in, and we're threatening blowing ourselves up and polluting the streams and the lakes and the rivers, etc., why do we have such a destructive component to our nature?
Well, I think part of it is the youth of our species.
Uh-huh.
And part of it is the newness of our technology. The dominant species on the planet doesn't live within the ecological boundaries, but interacts and changes it.
Hmm.
And that's what's causing many of our problems.
Yes.
Let me take this in a different way because it's kind of fun. Dick and I were discussing the teacher and the philosopher, Krishnamurti, the other night, and we had just said that he had defined love as freedom from conflict.
Hmm.
And in came one of the Ogata group, and she thought that was pretty good. Freedom from conflict was an excellent understanding of love. And then she asked the question, but with your species, how about freedom from fear, freedom from tension, freedom from stress?
Mm-hmm.
If a human can shake his fears, his tensions, his conflicts, his stresses, then, and only then, will he be able to get onto the same frequency with another human being and converse with that human being from the heart.
I
think that was a wonderful statement.
It was.
Love has to be an openness with the heart. Only then, you know, will we have something here on this planet. I think that that humans find that thinking starts usually with negative connotations.
Mm-hmm.
You think of something, if it's problematic.
That's true.
And that puts negative vibes out that have to be overcome.
Yeah.
But positive, you know, a positive approach lets the relationships or the jobs get done.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved what she had to say about that.
I wanted to say I really did enjoy all of you. I enjoy hearing you both on the radio again, and I think it's wonderful.
Thank
you. Keep
you
up the good work, and God bless all of you.
Thank you, Adonis.
Thank
for
you.
Joining in.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Bob is on the line. Hello, Bob.
Yeah, hello, Greta, Dick, and Bill.
Hi.
I had a question. Last Thursday night, 2020, had, I believe it was, Rama was his name, who possessed an energy that possessed this woman's body, 3,800 years old.
Ramtha, yes.
I'd like a constructive analysis on that, your opinion of her, or
well,
that incident.
I'll tell you, Bob, the message of change that Ramsa gives out dovetails with the scenario we were given over a decade ago. That is, cataclysmic events and not nuclear wars will be the big problem. Earthquakes, natural catastrophes are likely to occur. That goes right along with nature's plan. I like what Ramsa has to say about people finding a safe place to live and stockpiling food and being self-sufficient. So the actual message from whoever this entity may be, I think, is a right-on message. The question is, I think that you're asking is about J.C. Knight, who channels this.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, in many ways, what we do. She insists, hey, she's not a guru. She's not a savior. She doesn't want people moving in on her. The difference between us is she does run a very successful business with this work. And we do not. We work under a nonprofit structure. I don't know what else really to say about
that. Well, I would like to ask one more question, then. Is it possible that a... Bill, you're not going to like me for this. But is it possible that an entity can possess another body?
Certainly.
Oh, then it's... Uh-huh. Okay, well, I thank you both very, very much.
All right, thank you, Bob, for jumping in with that. We had J.C. Knight here one night, all night long. The ram did not come forth that night. She had been in trance, I think, three times that day, and it's pretty tough on her.
I think it's amazing altogether that she's able to, you know... have him come in on cue.